The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Reyes, Chief Judge Siegel, Judge Frisch, the Honorable Peter M. Reyes Jr. presiding.
Thank you. Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Wednesday, March 20th, 2024. We have four cases on our calendar today, three of which are set for oral argument. We'll be holding those oral arguments via Zoom today, and these arguments are being recorded and being live streamed as well. However, no other recording is permitted. The recording of these oral arguments will be available to everyone within a day or so you feel free to go back and listen to the oral arguments. All other rules of decorum apply, with the exception, of course, that you don't need to stand because there's no podium for you to stand in front of. We will have 15 minutes of oral arguments by appellant's counsel, followed by 15 minutes by respondent's counsel, and then 5 minutes for rebuttal by appellant's counsel, if you so choose. When you begin, please state your name for the record and the party you are representing. And with that, counsel for appellant, you may begin.
Thank you, and may it please the court, counsel, good morning. My name is Jason Brown, and I represent the appellant in this case, Brian Fleming. Your honors, we're asking the court to reverse the district court's dismissal of Mr. Fleming's action. I know time is short and the briefs are long in this case, but there are four or five critical issues that I think warrant discussion this morning. The first involves whether e-service is a valid form of service in substitution for service by mail. Second, whether Douglas County Court Administration committed error in not serving the relevant individuals affiliated with this file. Third, whether the county was properly before the district court in seeking to have Mr. Fleming's action dismissed. And then finally, I think a question surrounding personal versus subject matter jurisdiction. Your honors may be aware of the fact that this very issue was presented to the court perhaps 6 months ago in the Ruid case, which the Minnesota Supreme Court accepted review of. And my understanding is that oral arguments in that case are currently scheduled for early April, about 15 days from now. And so, for practical reasons, I think that it's reasonable to ask that this court reserve decision surrounding the issue of subject matter jurisdiction until the Supreme Court has had its opportunity to chime in.
Well, counsel, that's a little problematic for several reasons. One, we have a 90-day statutory deadline in which we need to issue our opinions. Two, the Supreme Court has no time limit as to when they will issue their opinion. So even if they hear oral arguments in April, it could be months or even sometime next year, well beyond our 90-day statutory deadline. And three, we've already held in State v. Chauvin that precedential opinion that we issued in the Root case is binding authority unless and until the Minnesota Supreme Court and or the U.S. Supreme Court say otherwise. So we need to follow our precedential opinion in the Root case.
I do understand, Your Honor. I believe the request is being made essentially to ask that there be some judicial economy. I know that Statute 488.08 Subdivision 3 allows the chief judge of this court to waive that 90-day rule if there's good cause. Now, I certainly understand and am not here to tell this court what authority it has or doesn't have, but I do think that in the event that the issue of retroactivity applies to this case following a Ruid decision by the Minnesota Supreme Court, the litigation would continue on and on. And so I'm just asking that the court take a second look at this to determine whether or not, in its view, this is a case where, there is some valid reason to, as it is allowed to do, suspend that 90-day mandate.
So
Mr. Brown, go ahead, Chief.
I was just going to say, if we were to decide not to do that, and obviously, if this court was to rule against, well, either side, we will rule against one side or the other, the losing party could petition for review to the Supreme Court and thereby preserve its the issue. But if we were not to say, yeah, let's just wait for some period of time, an indeterminate period of time before we issue our decision in this case. Is Ruid determinative? I mean, you lose it, or why not?
Well, I think Ruid at this point, I have to say it's the controlling disposition on the issue of personal versus subject matter jurisdiction. It would be disingenuous for me to argue that a binding published precedential opinion of this court that has yet to be overturned is anything but primary authority.
So I take it your position is that we decided the Ruid case incorrectly, and I'm interested to hear what the basis of that argument is.
Yes. Well, I think that first and foremost, within jurisprudence, there has been discussion about the fact that the appellate law in the area of subject matter versus personal jurisdiction in relation to a situation like this is at best confusing, I think, is the language that has been suggested. There are cases that seem to go one direction. I know that in the Ruid case, this court relied on some previously decided opinions surrounding the issue that went in favor of subject matter jurisdiction, but there are other cases out there that would tend to suggest otherwise. I'm thinking most specifically of that Skyline decision we've outlined in our brief, where it started with the Minnesota Supreme Court interpreting a very similar statute, the statute that allowed for appeal of a county board decision if made within 30 days. And in that case, the plaintiff tried to give notice in compliance with Rule 4.03 of the Rules of Civil Procedure. But because the plaintiff wasn't compliant, the district court dismissed for a lack of jurisdiction. It didn't specify whether it was subject matter or personal jurisdiction. And so in a subsequent case, the McCullough case that we've cited in our brief, they noted that Skyline did not overrule our long line of decisions treating insufficient service of process as a defect relating to personal jurisdiction, not subject matter jurisdiction. And as we've pointed out in our brief, there is a 100-year plus history of the Minnesota Supreme Court opining that defects in service go to personal jurisdiction as opposed to subject matter jurisdiction, starting with the Reiner case from 1883. And again, these are all outlined in our brief. And so if the court is not inclined to withhold opinion in this case in light of what happened in Ruid, I think, again, with the idea that I'm not here to dispute the court's authority with a binding precedential opinion, but I do, with due respect to that panel, believe that it was decided incorrectly. And I do think that's the reason the Minnesota Supreme Court has accepted review, to once and for all finally put this issue to rest, because the stakes are high in cases like this and in other cases. I would like to ask the court not to forget, what we're dealing with here, as opposed to some of the other constitutional cases or jurisdictional issues that have been out there. This isn't a county board making a decision about a waterway or about certain economic benefits people receive. We're talking about the welfare and safety of a child. And so the stakes are compelling. And it's for that reason that we have argued that indeed the district court in this case got it wrong with regard to subject matter jurisdiction. So with regard
what are we to do with the fact that let's say, okay, it should have been an issue of personal, not subject matter jurisdiction. But the commissioner was required to be served, and the commissioner wasn't served at all. And the statute provides for the methods of service. So what does that do to your argument?
Well, what I think it does is it gives Mr. Fleming the opportunity to correct the defect in service or the alleged defect in service. Subject matter jurisdiction is dispositive. If the court says it lacks subject matter jurisdiction, we're done. If there is a lack of personal jurisdiction asserted, one has an opportunity to correct that, to do what is necessary to either argue that personal jurisdiction does exist or to correct that defect and then bring them into the case. Now, what happened here is sort of the Ruud case turned upside down in a sense, although there's a lot more nuance to it. What happened here is that we asked on behalf of Mr. Fleming for court administration to go ahead and e-serve all relevant individuals, all relevant parties to this action. And the county didn't respond in its brief to any of the arguments we made about defects in service. When we asserted that the court had authority to order court administration to do that, the district court itself was inconsistent in suggesting it had no authority to order court administration to do it because the court ordered it. Our position is this: if the court didn't have authority to do it in the first place, the court wouldn't have signed that order. Now,
counsel, if I could stop you there, are you referring to the notice of appeal to the Commissioner of Human Services?
Yes.
Okay, so, but under Minnesota Statute 256.045, subdivision 7, it states that a person commencing a proceeding pursuant to that statute must serve the notice of appeal. So in other words, it seems that under the plain language of the statute that the burden is on the person, and that's not something, that burden is not on the county.
I'm not suggesting that the county is mandated in every case to do that. But what I am suggesting, Your Honor, is that there are occasions when court administration can sit in as that person. Sometimes court administration will order another government, or the court rather, will order another government agency to serve individuals in cases, be it law enforcement in an order for protection case or some other kind of circumstance, perhaps a real estate action involving a foreclosure.
But those are actions that are taken by judges, not by court administration. I mean, a court administrator has zero authority to order anybody to do anything.
Understood. And I don't mean to confuse the language. When I speak to court administration's failure to act or any power that it has, the two are indeed separate. The judge in this case accepted our proposed order, which suggested that the judge would have court administration in lieu of personal service by mail upon the relevant parties, have it e-file or e-serve them. And I don't think that that is an unreasonable request given the age that we live in. It's something that is done very easily and very often by court administrators.
But isn't that something that actually you need to go to the legislature and ask them to change? I mean, we are bound by statute. And the statute says personal service or mail. And that those are the two options, it seems to me. And I under separation of powers, I think, you know, that we have to abide by that. So what authority do you have that we can ignore that and say, oh, the courts can step in and come up with some other, because this is an action. I mean, this is a new action being filed, even though it's an appeal of a denial by an administrative agency.
Indeed. And Your Honor, let me try to answer this in two ways. The first is this, that the relevant statute, 256.045, subdivision 7, it predates. The language in the statute that says by mail or personally predates the creation of the e-filing system here in Minnesota. And second, this judicial branch's own guidance in its best practices manual that was issued back in May of 2023 suggests without equivocation that electronic service is a proper substitution for service by mail. And
what authority are we to accord to that, the handbook?
Well, I'll agree with the court. It's probably secondary authority, but if the judicial branch is going to issue a publication instructing lawyers, instructing individuals on how to proceed, I think that it certainly bears some weight. And I think that if it didn't bear that weight, it ought not be published. So people are relying on this information that is set forth. Now, there are lots of other rules that apply with regard to court actions that this court or the judicial branch has its authority over that don't require legislative approval. Things
Right,
like
but counsel, that's why it seems when you're referring to the handbook, we're talking about filing of documents with the court versus the statute that talks about service to begin judicial process. So it seems like they're two very different and distinct actions.
I think that there's probably room for that position to take hold. However, this is not necessarily an initiation of an action, I would argue. I would argue it's a continuation of an action that's had multiple steps leading up to the request by the district court. It seems at every turn, Mr. Fleming has been turned away, whether it's the county attorney, whether it's the district court, whether it's the Department of Human Services. And so I think that there may be some deference given to this form of service when it's an action that's sort of part of a continuum, as opposed to, say, the start of an initial tort action or real estate action, something like that. I see my time's up.
Have you been able to find a single case where our courts have said you can ignore the language in a statute and the court can just kind of fashion its own method for notifying parties of the initiation of a new court proceeding? I mean, is there anything where our courts have actually followed what you're asking us to do? That you've been able to find. Yeah.
I have not been able to find that. However, I would submit to the court two things. Number one, courts generally trail what's happening in the world. And so e-service is something that is evolving. These questions are bound to continue to come up. And second, I think that because e-service is so prominent at this point, that it is as duly recognized as any other form of service. There are lots of statutes that would have to be changed, Your Honor, to comport with what perhaps you're advancing, the idea that this statute doesn't specifically say that service via e-filing is appropriate. There are countless statutes that have gone unchanged for decades that predate e-service. And if the legislature were tasked with the chore of going in and modifying each and every statute that required service by mail to also say the word e-service as a method of viable service, there would have to be a significant supplemental session at the legislature to accomplish that. So,
Thank you, counsel. And you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal as well.
thank you.
Counsel for respondent, you will have 15 minutes. And we do have a clock. So please be mindful of the time. And please state your name for the record and party you are representing, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Matt Jorud. I represent Douglas County and the Department of Human Services. The legislature has explicitly delineated the process and requirements for an aggrieved party to appeal an order of the Commissioner of Human Services to the District Court. Central to this process is the mandate for service of the notice of appeal upon the Commissioner and any adverse party of record. This requirement is not merely procedural, but foundational, ensuring that all parties are duly notified and have the opportunity to participate in the appeal process. As already stated earlier, the Rood decision is precedent, which is directly applicable to this case, where the appellant similarly failed to serve the initial pleading as required by Minnesota Statute 256.045, Subdivision 7.
Mr. Jorud,
Yes.
your esteemed colleague has requested that we suspend the proceedings or stay the proceedings pending the decision in Ruid. Can we hear your position on that,
Well,
please?
Your Honor, my position is fairly simple. I believe the fact patterns were nearly identical. In that case, the county wasn't served here. It was the human services. I believe that I don't think there was really much difference in the fact pattern. I think that that will prevail, and I believe that until we have some sort of different direction, that's kind of where we go, for lack of a better way to put it.
Yeah, I appreciate that, counsel. My question was, is should we stay our decision pending the decision from the Minnesota Supreme Court in this for this matter?
Oh, no, Your Honor. I don't believe that should happen. I believe that this is Well, this has been litigated many times. I believe this is a solid position. I don't think it should be stayed. So the appellant has contended that the district court erred in its jurisdictional determination. However, this argument overlooks the statutory mandate for service upon the commissioner and any adverse party, as stated earlier. The appellant's attempt to delegate this responsibility to court administration, contrary to statutory requirements, cannot confer jurisdiction where it does not exist. Moreover, the appellant's appearance at the hearing does not and cannot cure the jurisdictional defect caused by the failure to properly serve all required parties. As the district court stated in its order, explicitly a party cannot waive subject matter jurisdiction defects as it is a limitation on the court, not the parties.
Counsel, do you want to address counsel's argument that this is really not a matter of subject matter jurisdiction, but rather a matter of personal jurisdiction?
Your Honor, I disagree.
Can be as, waived.
Oh, sorry.
Which I can be waived.
I do agree that personal jurisdiction can be waived, but as the court stated in its order, subject matter jurisdiction cannot be waived. I think trying to pawn this off on court administration, that without, you can't throw responsibility on court administration when the statute says differently. Even if the court alluded to that, I believe the statute dictates, and that's really all we have to work off of.
So the statute provides that the commissioner, it's discretionary whether the commissioner decides to participate in district court proceedings under the statute. And it looks like the commissioner has not decided to participate, at least so far. I mean, it's only the county. So what does that do? And I know the subject matter jurisdiction, it, you know, it doesn't matter. You can't waive it. But if there had been proper service of the county, but no service of the commissioner, then where would we be? And I know it's a hypothetical, but I'm interested in your response.
Well, Your Honor, I think we'd still be in the same position as some of these cases that I've reviewed dictated. Some cases the county wasn't served, some cases the commissioner wasn't served. I don't think it would make any difference because a party's a party. I think it's a pretty straightforward issue. My predecessor retired abruptly, so I've been trying to get caught up. However, he drafted an excellent brief, which I was trying to work off of. And I do believe that this is a party's a party and they need to be served. Subject matter does not exist. Trying to make the claim that court administration, it was their duty to serve parties, is in direct conflict with the statute. I don't believe there's any way around that. And I ask that the court uphold our position.
Thank you, counsel. I don't see any other questions, so we will now turn back to appellant's counsel, and you will have 5 minutes, Ms. Brown, for rebuttal.
Thank you. A couple of things I'd like to point out. The first is this, that if in fact, as counsel described it, this was somehow tried to be pawned off on court administration, that simply isn't a proper characterization of what happened here. An order was presented to a district court judge who has a decision to make as to whether or not the court is going to sign that order or not. In this case, the judge decided to sign that order, and it instructed court administration to serve all parties. Court administration didn't serve all parties. They didn't serve anyone. And so—
But counsel, we're talking about the district court ordering court administration to serve an order, as you mentioned. That isn't that different and distinct from serving a copy of the notice of the appeal?
Well, the notice of appeal, if I take a look, let me just pull out a copy of the actual notice of appeal It's an order for hearing and notice of hearing on the notice of appeal. And so I don't know, Your Honor, that there's necessarily a defect in the form of the order. I mean, it clearly delineates order for hearing and notice of hearing, suggesting petitioner has filed a notice of appeal to the district court requesting a hearing. And so while in form, it may not be the actual request or notice of appeal, it is an order for a hearing and a notice of the hearing. So I think it's a question of sufficiency of notice. Due process.
I mean, why isn't the notice of appeal the operative document? Just like a summons is an operative document to commence an action in district court.
I think it is an operative document. I think, however, in an attempt to use the e-filing service by consulting the Supreme Court's materials, by looking at proper methods of service, it seemed to us that at the time it was due and proper, and it seems the district court agreed, but then it didn't agree. Now, the problem with that is not necessarily that there's, you know, room for debate about it. The problem is they effectively shut us out and deprived us of even an opportunity to move forward, given the fact that at a later time they disagreed. Now, this issue of timing of the motion and notice requirements, we talked about this in our brief. The county itself is the individual who filed or didn't even file. They just, in the middle of a hearing, said, hey, we think this thing ought to be dismissed for lack of subject matter jurisdiction based on all the arguments that they continue to make. And while they are pointing the finger at Mr. Fleming and saying, ha, you didn't comply with notice requirements, they didn't comply with notice requirements regarding the motion to actually dismiss. The rules, I guess, regarding motions, the timing of a Rule 12 motion to dismiss, or Rule 115 requirement, the 28 days prior.
Were you prejudiced somehow by that? I mean, were you not allowed to put, you know, to put together an argument? And the order, well, why don't you respond to that? How was your client prejudiced?
We were prejudiced because if due process requires notice and a meaningful opportunity to be heard, we were told about this for the first time in the middle of the hearing. And so I was able to sort of ad hoc respond, but we were prejudiced. My client was prejudiced because we didn't have a full and fair opportunity to brief the issue as robustly as we may have liked to.
Did you make that request to the district court during the hearing?
I did not make that request of the district court during the hearing.
Okay. And then the order for hearing, that's what you're relying on as the order by the district court to provide service, I guess, substitute electronic service of the notice of appeal on the county and commissioner, correct?
That's correct. And it does, in fact,
but that's an order for hearing. I just don't see where you see in those words, and shall the court administrator shall e-serve the notice of appeal. I mean, that's an order for hearing. That's a standard order.
It is. And I see my time is up, if I may answer the question briefly.
Yes, you may.
If you look at our addendum, page 43, the caption says order for hearing and notice of hearing. But it starts out, Your Honor, in the preamble saying that he has filed a notice of appeal to district court from an order of the Department of Human Services. Now, I don't know that the relevant statute provides a specific form for the notice of hearing or notice of appeal that has to be submitted. I think the question is this, with due respect, would the agency have been put on notice of the appeal having received this order if court administration had e-served it on them? And I think the answer is yes, they would have. I don't think one can read this and not understand what's going on. So I do think that despite—
So you're saying Douglas County did not get a copy of this order for hearing and notice of hearing?
That's correct. That's what they say. When you refer to Douglas County, or if you're referring to the county attorney's office, yes, that's what the county attorney said in the middle of the hearing. If I take a look at the transcript,
All right.
it's in the transcript.
All
So
right. Yeah.
yes, that's what the county said. There's their
Right. That they
recollection is
never
they never got it.
got it through the e-filing
Yes.
system. Okay.
Thank you again, Your Honors, for taking this very important issue up. I appreciate it.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate arguments from both counsel and the briefing as well. We will be issuing an opinion within the 90-day statutory time frame, and we wish you both well. Take
Thank
care.
you.